It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President, Dr. John Jasinski. Each month, President Jasinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Jasinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know, we all know that there's so much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you've had a wonderful start to the new year and wish you and your family the very best in 2015. I am pleased to welcome you to the January edition of our show. In our first segment, we meet Kent Rader. You'll love him, a man with ties to Northwest and North Central Missouri who took a very serious career path and yet, after 17 years, decided to follow his passion to make people laugh and to make people happy. He is a stand-up comic, but unlike many in that profession, his is the clean side of stand-up comedy. In segment two, we are honored to visit with Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill and go down a very serious issue and serious road, the issue of sexual assault. Her legislation and efforts to be on the forefront in addressing this issue and joining with organizations like Northwest Missouri State University to bring this important topic to light and how we are coming up with common sense solutions to protect our students and help colleges and universities across the country to curb and hopefully eliminate sexual assaults. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Kent Rader to All Things Northwest. Known as the world's cleanest comedian and speaker, Kent helps people and associations learn and experience how laughter matters in reducing stress and also in building quality organizations. Kent graduated from William Jewell College in Liberty, Missouri, and he survived, and I want to underline, he survived 5 years in public accounting and 12 years as a CFO and a CEO of hospitals before he became a professional speaker in 1997. He's authored the stress reduction book titled Let It Go, Just Let It Go. And he co-stars with Jan McGinnis in the Baby Boomer comedy show, Clean Comedy for People Born Before Seatbelts, Safety Helmets, and Facebook. He's been heard on NPR's Talk of the Nation, Sirius Satellite Radio, and he's also the winner of the Branson Comedy Festival. You should also know you can see him on Comcast's comedy show, Who's Laughing Now? Kent's clean stand-up comedy DVD CD titled Kent Rader, the Grand Wizard of Comedy, was released on August 11th of 2014. Great background. Kent, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you, John. I'm glad to be here. Actually, one of the hospitals I worked in was in Fairfax, Missouri, not about 30 miles from here. So
right.
I am back in the Northwest.
Well, that's great. Well, it's great to have you back. And I'll tell you what, as you think about it, you were kind of laughing when I was saying you survived accounting. But how do you get from accounting to comedy? How do you get from accounting to anything? You know? So tell us about your background.
My background, I spent 17 years as a hospital CFO and CEO. I also had worked in public accounting as well, and I was kind of at a crossroads. I was tired of the healthcare industry. I'd gone back into public accounting and was needing to really make a change. And it was during a time when the home care segment of healthcare was going through a transition, and they were asking people to do programs on double entry accounting, how to read a financial statement, how to do a budget, and it is so dry. I was doing them, and so I'd tell stories, and I just loved to make people laugh. And so I started to speak then. I went out on my own, started doing some speaking, and mostly what I speak about today is humor and stress, and my book is about stress, and so that's pretty much predominantly what I speak on, and about four or five years into it, I decided I wanted to get to be funnier, so I started doing stand-up comedy, going into comedy clubs and working on that end, and so I don't think I really had a plan. It just kind of evolved.
Well, it's interesting. And of course, I've got a lot of accounting friends, so I want to make sure that those listening, you know, I love accountants. So I want to go on record and say that. But when you say that, you know, some of that material that you were helping individuals out with, you know, organizations out with, you know, was a little dry. So you kind of put some humor into it to help them make it more relevant, more understandable, right?
Exactly.
And that was kind of a launching pad for kind of where you're at today.
It really was. And as you and as you know in education, if you can make it interesting, people will learn. And that's really what I found was if I could make them laugh and tell a story that would accentuate the point I was trying to make, it worked out much better.
So you are a recovering chief financial officer.
I am.
And chief executive
I think
officer.
After I've done this now 17 years. I was telling my parents the other day, I've been doing this as long as I did accounting. So I think that makes me unemployable. I don't think anybody would hire me today.
Got it. Okay. Well, let's talk about the world in which we live. You know, there's certainly the work world. The demands are high. It's 24/7, 365 for so many individuals. The phones are there. The iPads are there, and so on. And so the stresses maybe are a little different than when you were a CEO
yes.
or CFO. But you were seeing that and sensing that, and then you've transitioned and said, "How can I help reduce stress and bring about some laughter?" So talk about the reduction of stress part of all this.
One of the things that I like to talk about is that stress, any sort of, before we any have any sort of feeling or emotion, we have had thoughts that precede those feelings or emotion. If you feel happy today, it's because you've had happy thoughts that precede that. And if you feel sad or stressed out, you've had sad or stressful thoughts. And one of the things that I like to point out is that the thoughts that we have about situations that we find stressful are no more important than the thoughts we have about a situation that we find enjoyable. They're simply thoughts. And so one of the things I really like to point out is that you are the architect of your stress, and your stress comes from your thoughts. And your thoughts, like I said, about stressful situations are no more important than your thoughts about any other situation. They're simply thoughts. And one of the things I like to bring out is that the number one fear Americans have is public speaking. And number two is death. Jerry Seinfeld, the comedian, says that means if you're at a funeral, you'd rather be in the box than delivering a eulogy. But I'm one of those sick people that can't wait to be in front of an audience. And it's because I have different thoughts that go through my mind when I think about being in front of an audience. And so one of the things that I point out is that we are the architects of our stress because it is based upon our thoughts, and that you don't have to take situations you find stressful any more important than you do any other situation. And one of the things that I like to point out is that humor actually changes our perspective on a situation. We've all been in situations that have been tense, and someone has made a joke or made it people laugh, and all of a sudden everybody has relaxed. And that's the one thing that I like to point out is that humor is a wonderful tool for reducing stress because it changes our perspective on the situation that we're experiencing.
So when you say we're the kind of the architect of our own stress, mm-hmm. and it really comes down to our thought process and kind of that positive mindset, if you will. When you say, you know, let it go, just let it go to reduce that stress, how does one let it go, so to speak?
There are a number of ways. Writing is a wonderful tool for reducing stress. Physical exercise, physical work is another one. But the one, like I said, I love is the positive use of humor. And when we experience humor in a situation, what it does is it changes our perspective. There's a man named Hans Selig who wrote a book called Stress Without Distress, and he said stress is based on our thoughts, but when we experience humor, it changes that perspective, thus it changes our thoughts, and thus it changes those feelings. And so that's one of the things I love to do is I believe it's so important that we take – one of the things I talk about in my speaking is take time every week to laugh. Because I think it's one of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take time every week and enjoy something that makes you laugh. Movies, books, television shows, recording. When our kids were young, and we lived in Rockport, Missouri at the time, it was at the time that Bill Cosby's special, I think it was called Himself, it was mm-hmm. about him and his family and his children. And I swear, my wife Twyla and I, we listened to that at least once a week. That was, I think, the only thing that got us through having young children was being able to laugh at someone else poking fun at what we were going through.
You bet. So yeah. I get it. You know, the stress reduction part of it is very, very important. But then you're kind of referencing clean humor. kind of that clean comedy, if you will. Talk about that, because that's obviously, again, you're an architect of your own comedy, if you
exactly.
will. And so you've chosen a path to be clean. How'd you get there?
Well, how I got there was that I had been speaking 3 or 4 years, I wanted to become more funny. And so what I did is I started to go into comedy clubs to work on actually being able to write something that was good enough that I could make people laugh in a comedy club. It's got to be the toughest audience you'll ever be in front of, because they're young and they're usually drinking, and it's just a tougher crowd. And I'm 55 years old, so I'm an old man when it mm-hmm. looks at comedians. So to be able to make a young kid laugh, you have to really, really work at it. But one of the things, I had no desire to do stand-up that I couldn't do in my speaking programs. And so one of the things that I did from day one was I was going to work on material that I could take directly out of a club that I knew made those audiences laugh, that I could take into my speaking and make a corporate audience laugh or any sort of audience laugh. And it has to be clean. It has to be squeaky clean. I did a show in Havelock, North Carolina years ago at just a one-night show. And the guy, when I walked in, he was just panicked. He said, "We've never had a clean comedian here." And I said, "You know, it'll be okay." And he goes, "You got to do your dirtiest stuff." And I go, "I've got about 25 seconds of something that's kind of suggestive, and that's all I've got. And I have to do an hour tonight, you know." But I said, "Don't worry, it'll be fine." And it was, because I ran into Chris Rock a couple of years ago, and I've met Chris years ago, and when I first,
he's a clean comedian too.
No, Chris is not. But one of the ironic things that Chris said to me was, he said, after seeing you and another comedian in New York, he said, "I have gone to telling young kids, start out clean, because what it does is it teaches you how to write something truly funny. You can dirty it up later if you want." If you look at the old Richard Pryor, and Richard Pryor was one of my heroes as a comedian because he told stories. But if you took out all of the language, it was still funny. And kids today, they don't think that. They think, well, all I have to do is get up and swear. And I like to point out, I have nothing against swearing. I just don't think it ought to be used as a punchline. And so what I did when I first went in is I wanted to work clean for two reasons. Number one, I needed the material to take into my speaking, and I couldn't have it be dirty there. But I also believed that it would truly help me find what was funny. Because if I could work in front of an audience, I did four shows in Dayton this past weekend, an hour each show, and don't say a single cuss word in the whole time, and I made a young, drunk audience laugh every time, and because it's truly funny. And so that's what really prompted me, was to make it truly funny. I had to work clean. I had to write clean.
You bet. So. Listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCV KRNW. I'm John Jasinski, your host, and you're listening to Kent Rader. He's a comedian, and he's actually going to be in St. Joseph in January at the Roubidoux Theater. Kent, you're talking about clean stand-up comedy, and it's obviously different. It's more difficult, I assume, than, you know, being able to just throw out a few cuss words here and there and all that. But if you think about storylines, you're talking about some comedians that tell stories. Do you tell stories, or what's the comedic act?
I do tell stories. When I was growing up, my grandmother Rader had a great sense of humor, and she would tell stories, and that's all I ever wanted to do, was to be able to tell a story.
So even though we don't have an hour for a show, can you give us a segment of a story that you might want to share?
Let me think of one. I love to tell a story. I'm not very handy around the house. My wife
and I join you with that.
Oh, good. I never learned to work tools, and but luckily my wife does. My wife is very handy.
I join you with that as well.
My wife just rewired our daughter's entire house. I mean, that's the kind of technician she is. But when Twyla does a project, my responsibilities are to cook. Stop asking stupid questions and go to the hardware store, because, you know, at the hardware store, they treat men like they know what they're talking about and women like they don't. But the problem is I have no idea what I'm talking about. She sent me to the store to buy staples for her staple gun one day. I had this number. There are 5,000 staples down at Lowe's, not one of them number M5613. So I bought a new staple gun that had staples in it, you know, because I'm But I could do without Twyla's sarcasm. When I hand her that second staple gun, she goes, "I'm glad you know how to pump gas. I'd hate to have to buy a new car every 400 miles." So that's the kind of thing I love telling a story. So.
That's beautiful. I tell you what, whether it be Twyla or your audiences, it's pretty obvious that you're choosing that comedy to uplift people and to kind of reduce that stress, as you were talking about. How do you know audiences react in a positive way? I mean, you're doing shows in Dayton, and here you're coming to St. Joseph, and, you know, you're sitting there for an hour, and how do you know you're connecting?
You know pretty quickly when you've connected or when you haven't. But the main way that I connect is to try to be on everybody else's level. I try to – when I open a show, I talk – the first 8 minutes is about having aging parents. Every one of us has had a parent who is aging, mm-hmm. and the problems that come with that.
What are some of those problems?
My dad just had his knees replaced, and I often say it's the result of 60 years of my mom riding his back, you know. But she doesn't like that joke.
No.
But I that kind of morphs into my childhood, and that my mother was the disciplinarian in our family, mm-hmm. but my mom, I love to tell a story about my brother was one of those people that barely made it through high school, D's and F's all the way across the board. And the reason is all he ever wanted to be was an engineer for the Rock Island Railroad. And that was that was all he planned to do. And he couldn't understand how school was ever going to help him do that. So he just blew school off. My mother, even though he had a job for the Rock Island the summer he graduated from high school, my mother made him go. She got him admitted to Culver Stockton College in Canton, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And she drove him all the way across the state of Missouri and unloaded him and said, "Good luck, son." And his last words to us that day were, "I'll see you within 4 weeks." And I remember that moment like it was yesterday. And my mom said that I wasn't too angry with her. I began to talk to her within a couple of days. My dad didn't say a single word to her for 2 solid weeks.
Wow.
And she said, in 25 years, she knew my grandmother Rader. They had their only crosswords over this. My grandmother said, "How do you take a boy you love and put him in a situation you know he hates?" And mom said, "It hurt to leave Mike there, but it would have broken my heart to know he never got a chance to try." Mm. And that's the kind of person she was. She uh-huh. could put – she could take the hit for that. My brother got to Culver Stockton, made the best grades of his life, and graduated with a BS in economics. And he's the treasurer of our railroad today in Chicago.
What a story.
And so it's that kind of I like to talk about how tough my mom was, but I think what always comes through is she had our best interest at heart. And when I talk about – my wife loves that stuff. I never do anything about my wife or my kids that I don't run past them first. But the thing Twyla said to him, she said, "You know, the thing I like best is that you take our relationship and you throw it out there. We all have problems in our relationship." Twyla and I have been married 30 years now. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we've been married a long time. We've all had our share of difficulties. But she said, "It really comes through how much this relationship means to you, even though you're making people laugh at it."
That's powerful.
And so, I mean, that's the thing that I have enjoyed doing is taking that and – and not just, you know, the old Benny Henny Youngman line of "take my wife, please," you know, mm-hmm, that joke, mm-hmm. you know, just bashing your wife. I like to talk about the relationship, but I also want it to show how much Twyla means to me or how much my children mean to me.
And that comes out, you know, obviously yeah. you're talking about your wife, your kids, your grandparents and so on.
Right.
So I assume then through all that, do you pick fun at yourself?
And, constantly.
You know, yeah. And the story earlier, you know, you were talking about going to the hardware store there, and
right.
I was thinking, well, I've been doing that for quite a while
right.
because that's what I do.
Right.
You know,
right.
wife does the heavy lifting, and
right.
I, you know, stop asking the stupid questions,
yeah.
go cook and get out of the way kind
yeah.
of deal.
That's, yeah, and that's cool. And I do. I poke fun at myself. The thing I have done – the thing that you notice about Jerry Seinfeld's show, the Seinfeld show, is that he didn't take all of the punchlines. He allowed the other three characters in the show to have punchlines.
Right.
And that's what I think made that show so unique. When they build a show around a comedian, it's usually give the comedian all the punchlines. And when I built an act, I don't know if I had if I really thought it through. But what I do is I do have some of the punchlines, but everybody else, every other character in my act also has punchlines. And that most of that is directed at me. One of my favorite things that I weave through here is my grandmother was a funny woman, but I don't think she ever meant to be funny. She was just that kind of a way. But she was tough. And anytime I would say something mean about a relative to my grandmother, she'd make me call him and apologize. And it's always really funny because that was the way I would say it. And she would kind of chuckle, and then the next thing I know, I'd be on the phone apologizing to somebody, you know. Right. And so I do, yeah. The punchlines, occasionally I get in trouble in my own act from the punchlines.
Well, give me an example of that.
She woke me up one time. I got to her house after a show, 5 a.m. Got to her house at about 1:45 Sunday morning. 5 a.m., she wakes me up, and she said, "Get up, boy, you can't make no money in bed." And I said, "Grandma, I don't know if that's true. Aunt Maud made a fortune in bed." And next thing I know, I'm on the phone with Maud apologizing. But one of my favorite ones was my cousin Robbie. Let's see, one of my other cousins had a son that they thought had ADD or possibly even ADHD. And my cousin Robbie said to her, "Grandma, I know that boy. I think he might just be STUPID." And, of course, next thing he knows, he's on the phone apologizing.
That was
the way she was, yeah. So,
yeah. Well, obviously, your grandmother had a profound influence on you. Kent, are there times when you bomb? And if there are, what do you do?
Well, I don't know that I bomb that much anymore. When you start out, you bomb constantly, and you get sweat trickling down your back. They always call that flop sweat. Every comedian knows about it. But the thing a few years ago, my wife's, I was the keynote speaker, closing keynote at the Arkansas Mortgage Bankers Association, the bankers are a little tougher audience than most, and it happened to fall 2 weeks after the collapse of Lehman Brothers, you know, throwing our economy into this latest recession, and they had an economist go on in front of me, and he just belittled these mortgage bankers about how they had screwed up our economy. He gets done, 375 of the 400 people walk out, and I've got 25 people remaining. I do an hour, and I'd maybe got a dozen chuckles. You know, Tim Allen of Home Improvement, he said, "Doing comedy in front of people who don't laugh is like being in front of a bad firing squad. They don't quite kill you. They just leave you standing there." And I got off the plane, and Twyla picked me up, and she said, "How was it?" And I said, "Oh, it was awful." I said, "You have no idea what it's like talking, you know, for an hour to 25 people with a stupid look on their face." And she goes, "Really? I'm a teacher." You know, I mean, but what she said next was absolutely profound. She said, "You know, I know it's hard to have a small, unresponsive audience, but," she said, "from what you told me, it sure sounded like those 25 people could have used a good laugh today."
Yes.
And I was ashamed of myself because for the first 10 or 11 years I was performing, it was about how it made me feel. At that night, I adopted the advice of a guy named Jack LaPierre's, who said, "Your performance isn't about bringing glory to you. It's about bringing joy and happiness to an audience." And when I adopted that subtle change, and I actually first thought about what it was like for the audience instead of what it was like for me up there, it really frees you, because at that point you start looking to try to find something to make them laugh, and try to find something that makes them funny and make them that they find is funny. And so it really did free me up at that point, was to just do everything you can to please the audience. It isn't about you; it's about them.
Well, it's pretty evident, because you're making an impact on so many people, and it comes across in just the conversation that we're having here on All Things Northwest. And with that success, obviously, you're coming to St. Joseph. You'll be performing at the Roubidoux Theater on January 17th at 7:30 p.m. Can you please give our listeners a little glimpse of what they might expect as they think about attending that and de-stressing and enjoying an evening's performance?
Right. We'll do 75 to 90 minutes and just have a lot of fun. Like I said, I not only talk about having aging parents, I talk a little bit about my accounting background, my business background, if you will. Have the two biggest chunks of material that I have are about my wife, Twyla, and our relationship that's been going on now for 30 years. And then the last section I talk about is not only about my children, but it's also about now we have a grandson and how that is different than having children of your own. And then the final piece is about having grown children. Both my children are grown now and out in the world and working and doing what they love. So I talk a little bit about that. So,
well, we here at KXCBK on W certainly invite our listeners to Join our friends at the Roubidoux Theater in St. Joseph. It's January 17th at 7:30 p.m., joining Kent Rader down there. Kent is billed as the world's cleanest comedian and speaker. Kent, thank you very much for joining All Things Northwest. Good luck and have a great time at the Roubidoux Theater, but certainly throughout 2015.
Well, thank you so much. I love this campus. I used to come here when I was at William Jewell. We ran track up here, and what a beautiful place and what a great, great place.
Well, thank you. And thanks for what you do for people all around the world, because it really does make a difference in these sometimes difficult times, but real positive times. And we just have to embrace that. And like you said, be the architect of our own thoughts.
That's right. I sure appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Kent. That's Kent Rader right here on All Things Northwest. When we come back, we'll talk to Senator Claire McCaskill. She'll discuss her Campus Accountability and Safety Act for colleges and universities. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXEV, KRNW.
Support for KXEV, KRNW comes from United Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Missouri and Iowa. This winter, United Electric reminds you to use caution when using space heaters and electric blankets by checking for frayed, brittle, or cracked cords. More at ueci.coop.
There are many organizations students are able to join when they attend Northwest Missouri State. Alumna Adrian Cornelius participated in track and field and the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. She says those activities helped get her where she is today.
I think just, you know, being really busy with track and field and having multiple practices a day and having to go to class and also being involved in extracurricular activities, it's taught me to manage my time well and to be focused and detail-oriented and just learning to get things done.
Cornelius currently serves as an executive assistant for Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Clarinda Regional Health Center. Celebrating its 75th anniversary, CRHC has been providing health care in southwest Iowa and northwest Missouri since 1939. More at clarindahealth.com.
Many students who attend Northwest Missouri State come from states bordering northwest Missouri. Alumna Laura Lacina is from Iowa. She chose Northwest because of low out-of-state tuition rates.
At least in Iowa, you pay less out-of-state tuition in Missouri than you do in-state tuition at a state school here in Iowa. And also, you know, you get a computer. The classes are small. It's such a great experience that I would never trade it for anything else.
Lacina graduated from Northwest Missouri State in 2007. She is currently an office assistant at Thrivent Financial in Johnston, Iowa.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Atchison Holt Electric Cooperative, providing power to members in Northwest Missouri and Southwest Iowa. Atchison Holt Electric reminds you that sealing air leaks and gaps in the walls of your home's outside basement walls will prevent energy waste this winter. More information is at www.ahec.com. Co-op.
Welcome back to the January edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Senator Claire McCaskill. Claire McCaskill, Democrat from Missouri, is currently serving her second term in the United States Senate. In 2006, she became the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate from Missouri, winning the seat once held by Harry Truman. She has done so much while she's been in office. She's waged a successful six-year effort to rein in wasteful wartime contracting practices in Iraq and Afghanistan. She's also signed legislation implementing historic wartime contracting reforms, signing those into law. As a senior member of the Armed Services Committee, Claire drew upon her years as a courtroom prosecutor in leading the successful effort to reform how the military justice system handles sexual assaults in our armed forces, successfully enacting sweeping changes to protect and empower survivors and hold perpetrators and commanders accountable. She continues her efforts to protect her constituents with her recent sexual assault legislation regarding Americans' college and university campuses. And in fact, that's what we'll be talking with Senator McCaskill about today. Right now, I'm pleased to welcome Senator Claire McCaskill to All Things Northwest. Senator, thank you for joining us.
It's an honor to be with you, and I'm a big fan of your university and the Maryville area, and I know you guys do great work up there, so it's great to be on with you today.
Well, we appreciate your time and certainly your thoughts. Let's jump right into the topic at hand. You've written the Campus Accountability and Safety Act. What brought you to doing that?
Well, I spent the last 3 years trying to really focus on sexual assault in the military. Some of your listeners might remember that early in my career, I was an assistant prosecutor in Kansas City and then went on to serve as the elected prosecutor in Kansas City for a number of years. So I spent a lot of my late 20s and 30s in the courtroom prosecuting sex crimes. I'm very familiar with the challenges those cases represent, the incredible trauma that victims go through, the amount of support they need and many times don't get, and how truly the process sometimes re-victimizes the very people who need the system to help them. And so when I saw the problems in the military, where victims were not getting support, where there wasn't adequate training, where the problem was not being taken seriously, it was a natural transition to then begin, as we accomplished a lot of reforms in the military, to then begin to look at college campuses where it has some of the similar problems, and that is a closed environment, a lot of peer pressure, sometimes peer retaliation or, isolation from friends. And so I thought, well, we need to take a look at how this is being handled on college campuses, which led us to a number of roundtables, as you know, a number of visits around the state, visiting with all kinds of folks, from students to administrators to police to campus security. And now I think we are continuing to work on this bill, which I believe could really help.
Well, Senator McCaskill, as you talk about the whole experience with the military, as you think about trying to put that legislation together for the military, what kinds of learnings will you take from that experience and help in the current legislation for colleges and universities?
Well, one thing that I knew from the time I handled these cases as a prosecutor is how a victim is treated at the moment that she tells someone what has happened is incredibly important. If there is an access point where she can go and with confidence and confidentiality talk about what has happened to her so that she then can learn what options she has, not just for her own mental health, but also in terms of the criminal justice system, or in the case of the military justice system. If someone doesn't get that kind of support and good information at the moment of report, the chances of holding the perpetrator accountable and frankly being able to really give that survivor the confidence she needs to face the world after such an attack goes dramatically down. So that's the goal here. The goal here is to try to help campuses identify how important it is their students know where they can go for help, that help can be provided confidentially, that good information can be provided, and then that student can then make a decision whether or not they're willing to go forward, come out of the shadows, and actually face a criminal justice system or a Title IX process on campus.
And Senator, as you think about putting this Campus Accountability and Safety Act together, something that's pretty interesting and you don't see a whole lot of anymore anyways is bipartisanship. You have other co-sponsors, including Dean Heller from Nevada, Republican, Richard Blumenthal, Democrat from Connecticut, Chuck Grassley, the Republican from Iowa, Kirsten Gillibrand, Democrat from New York, Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire is a Republican, and Mark Warner, the Democrat from Virginia. And I shouldn't forget Marco Rubio, the Republican from Florida. How do you feel like this will help play a key role in allowing the passage of the bill?
Well, I think one thing everyone has noticed, that Washington has really kind of been rolling around in the mud for the last several years, playing political ping pong, trying to blame the other party, trying to get an advantage in elections. And there hasn't been enough effort put into beginning the legislative process with bipartisanship. It's been more about gotcha and trying to get people to vote on controversial things that get them in trouble at elections than us trying to find compromise and consensus. So we began this process, and I was determined that we would not introduce a bill unless we had as many Republicans supporting the bill as Democrats. And that was hard because we disagree on things. I wanted some things in the bill that I had to give up. The Republicans wanted some things that they had to give up. But ultimately, we came forward with a package after a lot of hard work that we all can agree on, and now we're working on making some changes to it based on the input we've had from college campuses, from students, from survivors groups. And the fact that we have worked with Republicans in putting this bill together, I think will go a long way in making sure that we can get these reforms in place, even with the change in the majority of Congress in the Senate that we will have.
And listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest here on KXCBKRNW. I'm your host, John Jasinski, talking today in segment two with Senator Claire McCaskill. Senator, here it is, January 2015, but last month, in December, a report came out, sexual assaults down, reporting of crimes up in the military. And I think you were quoted as saying this is exactly the combination we're looking for. Talk about that and how it will help this legislation for colleges and universities.
Well, I think showing that you're making progress and making a difference is incredibly important. And we put these reforms, by the way, we're still working on more reforms in the military. We're constantly informed by how the process is going and learning new things that we need to work on. But the historic reforms were mostly put in place about a year ago, in January of 2014. And so at the end of the year, the president asked the military to report on progress. And I was very nervous about it because obviously if progress hadn't been made, we were going to have to go back to the drawing board. But progress was substantial. The prevalence of unwanted sexual contact in the military was down 25% in a year. Over the previous 2 years, reporting had gone up 58%. And importantly, the non-restricted reporting, in other words, the reporting that is not kept confidential, that allows the military to hold perpetrators accountable, had gone up 60% in 2 years. So prevalence going down and reporting going up. We went from 1 in 10 sexual assault victims reporting their crimes to 1 in 4 reporting their crimes, which means they have confidence that they can come forward and get the services and support they need, that they will be treated with respect and dignity and not their credibility not immediately called into question. So I am pleased with the progress we've made. We still have a ways to go. There was still way too much report of retaliation, particularly among their peers, not among commanders, but among their peers. And I've asked for a follow-up report, which we will get in the spring, that will begin to delineate how they're working on retaliation. We've now made retaliation a crime. And so I'll be anxious to see how many of those kinds of cases are being brought.
Well, and I know those positive results, you know, most of them is kind of what we're looking for with regard to legislation for colleges and universities. You referenced your campus tours here, and back in late 2014, you had toured Missouri's campuses, our university's college campuses, called the Claron Campus Tour. You came to Northwest Missouri State University, and I'm just wondering, for our listeners' sake, what did you take away from your experience at Northwest in that Claron Campus Tour?
Well, I think there were a lot of similarities in all the campuses I visited, and I visited many over that week, and I think visited with administrators from 30-some different colleges and universities in the in Missouri during that week, because we were able to attract administrators and students from other campuses to some of the campuses that we visited. So it was bigger than just the locations where we were. The similarities, and we heard some of this at Northwest, I think that the administration, including your administration, is working very hard to get this right. I think everyone realizes it's a problem. I think it has risen in terms of a priority for universities and for parents and for students. But one of the problems I think that we have is that all the programs in the world do no good if students don't know about it. And so what was interesting at Northwest was the conversations we had about how much ownership will students take of being part of this solution. You can't stand by and watch. You need to engage. You need to help educate other students about what services are available. Making that that bridge between good programs being put in place And the utilization of those programs, because students know about them, is the biggest challenge, I think, that most campuses face, including Northwest, is that how do you make sure that every student avails themselves of the opportunities that you are vigorously trying to get as part of the process there.
Well, and I appreciate that. And I also know that while you were on campus at Northwest, you noted that we had a very engaged student population during your session. What did you notice about our students in that engagement?
Well, first of all, there were some campuses I visited, I was disappointed how few students were there. You had a number of students there, many of whom were knowledgeable about what was, and frankly were participating in trying to solve the problem. But they were also very interested in what more can be done. And, the whole campaign that has been started, that it's on us, taking responsibility for changing a culture that too often has looked the other way on campuses. Lots of alcohol, risky behavior, and then predators taking advantage of that. And we got to get past the point of where young women who have been victimized say, well, maybe it's my fault because I drank too much, and get it rather to the point where maybe it's my fault because I saw my buddy acting in a way that was inappropriate and I didn't intervene and stop it.
And as you think about how to address all these behaviors, I think we were talking when you visited back in 2014 that Northwest took the step to require all of our students, our faculty, and our staff 100% to complete training with regard to Title IX. What do you see across the country? Do you see other colleges, universities taking that step?
There were only a handful in Missouri that had taken that step, and I think it's very important that that become the norm. And I'm proud that Northwest is leading in that regard. You can't really do anything about this problem if people don't understand it. I mean, I had some students in some campuses that I visited that weren't really sure what was sexual assault and what wasn't. They weren't even comfortable that they understood what was a crime and what wasn't. Well, obviously, that's a big problem. So the mandatory training that you've embraced at Northwest, I think, is really taking a leadership position on this issue, and I hope that other universities and colleges follow that example, because you are, after all, institutions of learning, and this is a subject matter that is maybe as important as most of the subject matters that you so ably teach on your campus, and that is the subject matter of personal safety and responsibility.
Well, we would concur, and while we still have work to do, we certainly will continue the effort. Senator McCaskill, where do you go now with the legislation?
We will be in the process now, here early in 2015, of reintroducing the legislation. We'll add more co-sponsors. We will make some changes to reflect the input that some of us have received as we went back to our states and listened and learned from students and survivor groups and advocates and administrators and police and prosecutors, hopefully make the bill even better. And then our hope is that sometime this spring, in this new year, we'll be able to get this bill passed into law.
Well, we certainly will be viewing that, watching it, and hopefully seeing that go forward as quickly as possible. Senator McCaskill, we so much appreciate your efforts on this important issue. We appreciate your service to our country and certainly to our state. And thanks for joining All Things Northwest on KXCBKRNW.
Thank you for having me.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, comedian Kent Rader and Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill. Thanks, too, to our producer, Ben Nelly, and also another student producer, Brandon Travis, students here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV station manager Rodney Harris. Friends, please take good care. Treat each other well, provide good works for others, and keep celebrating and advancing our region. I'm John Chasinski, and thanks for your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV, KRNW, and Public Radio.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from United Electric Cooperative, Clarinda Regional Health Center, and Atchison Holt Electric. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. This program is written and produced by multimedia journalism major Ben Noly. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.